Ghost Knight Media Studios and Paranormal Underground Magazine, welcome to Paranormal Underground Radio. It's time to explore the unexplained with your hosts, Rick Hale and Karen Frazier.
It is Thursday night, and if you can hear our voices, you're exactly where you need to be. She is Karen Frazier, and I am Rick Hale. This is Paranormal Underground Radio at ztalkradio.com. Welcome. So, Karen, last week,
yes,
at the week off.
Yes, but, I was watching children play music.
Oh, well, I can't think of anything teenagers. Terrible.
No, these are actually really good. They're high school students, so it was far better than you might imagine.
I was in chorus when I was in high school. It was the only way that I could get out of not taking a language. So I opted to sing instead of speak Spanish or French.
I figure now I have paid my dues. I had years and years and years of terrible music concerts. Sorry, kids. And we finally come into our own. We've earned this, man.
See, you know, and I've got a long way to go because the future world's greatest psychical investigator, Theodore Nicholas, it's going to be years before I even have to worry about that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so we have something really terrifying coming up in our family. Okay. What's the date today?
Today's the 9th.
The 9th in 4 days.
In 4 days?
In 4 days, I am taking my 15-and-a-half-year-old son to get his learner's permit.
Oh my God! I take it back about the singing and the music. If your son is any kind of driver that I was at 16 years old, I'm just messing with you. I'm just messing with you. He's gonna do all right. So
I was terrible. I was a terrible, terrible driver. I had like 4 accidents before I got my driver's license. That's right.
Yeah, it's apparently, according to my wife, who has a lead foot, I tend to drive kind of slow, but that's only because I don't want to accidentally kill anybody or get killed myself. So, guest this week. We missed last week, but we come back and we've got something that's pretty interesting. So,
that's
Karen,
right. Our guest already has Rick curled up in a corner sucking on his kneecaps.
Yes.
Yes, he does, because we are going to be talking about some really sciencey explanations for all things paranormal. Sciencey to the point that it sort of ties into that thing that terrifies Rick most of all, physics and quantum physics super geometry. So our guest tonight, his name is Thomas Fusco, and he's written a book called Beyond the Cosmic Veil. And his website is cosmicveil.com. And he's got, I spent a lot of time on it this afternoon since I got my new glasses and I can now see my computer screen again. So I spent some time on it this afternoon and I'm ready.
Okay.
Way smarter than me. We should probably have Techie McScience Geek be doing this whole radio show tonight while we just sat there, you know, and like.
Well, why don't we have Jim fill in? You know, I mean, or just come in? Is he around? Can he come in and talk to this cat?
He's out doing something on his honey-do list because I was almost killed on our driveway today. So he's out making sure that I live and that when my son drives down our driveway for the first time, oh God, that he lives as well.
Well, very good then. So you went to the Klondike.
I did. We had it was an investigation class and a finding your psychic voice class at the Klondike in St. Helens, Oregon. And I've been there before and investigated it before and found it absolutely fascinating and was no pun intended dying to get back in. And so I was able to, not this last Saturday, I think, but the Saturday before. And you know, it was pretty amazing. And for me, it's a really interesting thing because I have always tended to be extremely skeptical about any abilities that I might have.
Okay. There's nothing wrong with that.
No. And so I had all of these things coming into my head while we were investigating. And then we went and did research and we found out about the history and a lot of it was right on. And so that's pretty exciting for me. And at the same time, you know, I'm still hideously skeptical of my own abilities. But hey, baby steps. And
it
then we had
honest.
a That's right. We did that on Saturday, and then on Sunday we went and did a little bit of a pre-investigation in a house that we're going to investigate here at the end of the month. So okay. I got my ghost on that weekend, and it was good.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Yeah. At work, they're finally going to be admitting that, yes, we do have a ghost in the building. Last night when I went to work, I was talking to my partner, Wendy, and she said that they were having a meeting, and the staff members in the meeting were starting to talk about how they have seen this shadow form entity that's in the back hallway. I've been seeing this thing for years. Nobody ever took it seriously. Now I have other people who are like, yes, we've seen this thing. It runs back and forth between two rooms, and it just sort of disappears, and you feel uncomfortable. Yeah. So I may actually get to investigate the place that I work.
That's very cool. And what you talking about shadow people and entities is really great, because our guest has some really solid theories on how those occur and what they are. And actually, there's some kind of surprising theories, because what he does is he takes a lot of the common assumptions that we make in the paranormal, which really aren't all that scientific at all.
Right.
And he turns them on his ear and he says, no, you have to look at all the things that you're assuming and get those out of the picture.
Right. Well, you know, I mean, we were talking a little bit about it before the show. I still am very much a traditionalist when it comes to psychical research and investigation. I actually still refer to myself as a psychical researcher. That's pretty traditional in and of itself. But I still believe that that spirits, apparitions, ghosts, whatever you want to call them, the thing that goes bump in the night, are, you know, they're still the souls of the dearly departed. And
I go back and forth about that, but that's certainly an assumption that we're making.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you go to these places, these 800-year-old castles, and people are seeing the headless form of, you know, whichever woman that King Henry VIII was married to and decided to behead. You see, you get hundreds of thousands of people that are going to go see these things, and they see these entities. So it's like, I can't help believe that they are, you know, the souls of the dead.
So. Right. Well, actually, Mr. Fusco goes beyond that. And what I don't know that he argues that they aren't that. Because I've read some of his papers and things he's written. What he talks about is, how are we able to see something that's not physical? How are we able to hear something that's not physical? And his theories are different than what you hear parapsychologists talk about. So, be really fascinating.
Well, I think that's great, because now, you know, we're going to get like a different perspective on that. And there's nothing wrong with getting a different perspective, because let's face it, the only experts on this are dead. You know, people who have passed on, they're the only real experts. They're the only really, you know, people who know what goes on after this life. So nobody can call themselves an expert. If you're going to be honest with yourself, don't call yourself that.
Okay, that's right. So, and I don't call myself an expert. I'm pretty much a dilettante. But that being said, let's do this. Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to be talking to Thomas Fusco. If during the break you want to check him out, go to his website, Cosmic Veil. It's V-E-I-L, cosmicveil.com. So we'll be right back. This is Paranormal Underground Radio on Z-Talk Radio.
If you are a small business owner, you are paying too much for products and services. Do not spend your hard-earned cash on items you can get on trade. UTXTrade.com was formed specifically so you can trade your products or services with other companies on the network for items like advertising, computer repair, office furniture, printing, hotel stays, and much more. For more information, please visit UTXTrade.com. That's UTXTrade.com. A proud sponsor of Paranormal League of America.
In her riveting novel, Breaking the Beyond, writer Kim Casey brings to life a supernatural tale filled with mystery, humor, and intrigue. Kim's suspenseful story focuses on Risa, a compassionate social worker who assists Owen, a young psychiatric patient. Is a 300-year-old entity speaking through Owen, or does he simply possess multiple personalities? Visit awningpublishing.ca to order your copy of Breaking the Beyond. That's A-H-N-E-E-N publishing.ca.
Hi, I'm Chad Wilson, publisher and co-founder of Paranormal Underground magazine. And I'm Cheryl Knight, editor-in-chief and co-founder of Paranormal Underground Magazine.
Every month, Paranormal Underground explores the unexplained with a free monthly online magazine.
We take an in-depth look at all kinds of unexplained phenomena, talk with some of the field's top experts, and share the latest news and information about the paranormal.
Visit us at ParanormalUnderground.net, where you can read the magazine online, explore our paranormal evidence galleries, watch videos, participate in discussions, or read blogs with some of our writers and editors.
We hope you'll join us. Visit ParanormalUnderground.net and explore the unexplained.
Do you want to keep up with what's going on at Paranormal Underground?
Then tweet us on Twitter at ParanormalUG.
Or follow us on Facebook at Paranormal Underground.
Meet us on MySpace, Paranormal Underground.
There's no need to be in the dark about what's going on at Paranormal Underground. Join us on your favorite social networking site today.
Hi everyone, it's Karen Frazier at Paranormal Underground.
And I'm Rick Hale, Paranormal Underground writer.
We're here to invite you to explore the unexplained with Paranormal Underground Radio, live and on the air.
Join us every Thursday night for paranormal talk and great guests from 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern Time on ztalkradio.com.
Station identification.
You're listening to ZTalk Radio Network.
Operating frequency
on ztalkradio.com. The views expressed and opinions given by the individual hosts and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of ZTalk Radio, its affiliates, or sponsors.
Hey, welcome back to Paranormal Underground Radio at ztalkradio.com. We are your hosts, Karen Frazier and Rick Hale. And tonight joining us, we have a very interesting guest. Now, allow me to preface it before I get into our guest here, you know, introducing our guest. There are various theories on, you know, the paranormal. And, you know, not all of them may be right. Some of them may be right. But, however, we're going to be talking to Thomas Fusco tonight. Now, Thomas is the author of Behind the Cosmic Veil, A New Vision of Reality. I love the name of that book. Thomas is an independent researcher who has devoted nearly three decades investigating the relationship between mind, physics, spirituality, parapsychology, scientific anomalies, and paranormal phenomena. Man, I almost lost my breath there. With the goal of uncovering the unifying cosmological framework that has eluded mankind for generations. So we're going to be talking about UFOs, strange behavior, paranormal phenomena, and all things that go bump in the night and might take you from your bed as you sleep. Thomas Fusco, welcome to the underground.
Hi, folks.
Hey. Hello. So I've been looking forward to talking to you, like I mentioned to you off the air. I spent a little time on your website today, and what I have discovered is that what you've done is stripped away all of the assumptions that many paranormal investigators make to come up with an actual physical explanation. Is that a good way to explain what you've kind of done with your book?
Well, yes. In a sense, what we have in the paranormal field right now is kind of what I call a conceptual impasse, and that we go into these haunted sites and observe all these different types of phenomena, apparitions, disembodied voices, cold spots, so on and so forth, and we don't have any kind of a model by which we can understand the mechanics, what I call the paranormal mechanics behind those things, and how they're related. So the natural assumption is that the only connective tissue, the only common element that seems to join all these together is the idea of a spirit. Mm. And so the spirit becomes the cause in people's thinking for all of the effects. What I've done is to say, okay, let's put the spirit aside. Let's not cloud our thinking with what I call the criminology end, which is concerned about who done it, so to speak.
Right.
And let's just focus on the forensics. The problem we have in this field is that we have what I say 1,000 criminologists for every 0.25 forensists.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And so what I wanted to do was concentrate specifically on the physical observations themselves and find out what conclusions that we can draw from them.
Right. So one of the things, as I was reading through some of your stuff, is you seem to break down all of these physical manifestations that we see of what we assume is spiritual, EVPs, disembodied voices, seeing things, you give an example of a book lifting up and flying across a room, something I have experienced, by the way.
Yes.
So you break all of these things down into saying that they're actually the same type of event, and it's, I've forgotten the word right now, it's trans something. What am I talking about?
Well, what you're talking about is what I did. I found out early on in my research that there were a couple things I needed to do. One of them was to come up with a scientifically reasonable, hard definition for what the paranormal actually means, and then also to discard all of these, various different types of terminology that we use to describe these events. Much of it actually dates back to the 19th century. And so I came up with a new system of classification for the paranormal that uses the names of translocation, which is what you're talking about.
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Translocational phenomena. Transmigrational, transmutational, transmental, and then synchronicity. And virtually all supernatural phenomena can fall under those five categories. So, yes, with a book flying across the room, levitation, that type of thing, falls under translocation.
Okay.
Now, Tom, let me ask you this. We were talking a little bit before. I'm very much a traditional psychical researcher and investigator. I still believe that the spirit that I am investigating, or spirits in a haunted home, whatever, is the spirit of a dead person. Now, am I really far off on that and others who are like me?
Well, according to my approach and the way that I've tried to take this into consideration, is that I consider the criminology, which is in a sense what you're talking about, the mm-hmm. entity or whatever the actual cause is in terms of the perpetrator.
Okay.
I've tried to separate that out from the physical observations. This doesn't mean that I'm saying that there is no perpetrator. Certainly my theory very much allows for and describes disembodied, coherent collections of information that someone would actually be able to call an entity with some sense of validity to that.
Okay.
And to see that they can exist and they can initiate these kinds of reactions. But what I try to illustrate is this. If we had a murder where you had a victim that was shot through the head, so to speak, mm-hmm. even if you found the perpetrator and you found why they did it and they were there and they're the ones that did it, just having the perpetrator there doesn't explain why there's a hole in somebody's head. There's
True.
A whole
right.
pile of physics that's missing in between. And so that's what I concentrate on. I want to concentrate on the gun, the physics of the crime scene, how everything occurred, and, as far as who might have done it, be able to give those criminologists a model by which, if they ask me, hey, Tom, do you think that this is possible? I could say yes. According to this model, it is, or no, according to this model, it's not.
So okay. Can we talk about the book flying across the room? So we know that a book has flown across a room. How does that happen when there's not a physical person to stand there and hurl the book?
Well, this is what, of course, makes it paranormal. And this goes back to my definition that I came upon as to what defines, what constitutes a paranormal event. And after thinking about it very carefully, what I concluded was that a paranormal event is a physical observation that interacts with its physical surroundings, but has no directly connected physical cause in that vicinity.
That makes absolutely complete sense to me.
So that's going to be sights, sounds, and actual, movement events, right?
Yes. In other words, anything that you can experience with your five senses, or anything that you can measure with any kind of a recording device, is clearly going to be something that is physically reacting with its environment. Otherwise, it would not disturb the air molecules to create waves that you could hear. It would not deflect photons that you could see with your eyes. These things are actually interacting with their physical environment. It's just that there's no direct physical cause that's in the immediate vicinity connected to the effect that can explain what's going on. So, for example, with the book flying across the room, we simply do not have the mechanism physically present in that vicinity that can, number one, generate that kind of energy.
Right.
Number two, channel that kind of energy, house it and direct it in a specific way to cause the effect of that book being lifted up and flying across the room. This is what makes it paranormal. We do not have a mechanism, a physical mechanism present to the effect that can generate and focus that kind of energy to lift up a book and throw it.
So the assumption we're making when something like that happens is that it's energy doing it, right?
Yes, and okay. This is where we run into trouble, because it's too, we toss around the word energy so much in this field, mm-hmm. that it's sometimes for me it's almost painful to listen to. Because when you understand the physics of energy, you understand, yes. that what you're dealing with is not energy at all in a conventional sense.
Right.
One of the things that Karen, that you hear all the time is spirit energy.
Yes.
And mm-hmm. I consider that a conflict of terms. It's like saying honest politician.
It's an oxymoron. Okay.
Jumbo shrimp, military intelligence. Yeah.
Because by definition, a spirit is not physical. And okay, energy, yeah. by definition, is physical. So yes. what you're doing is kind of mixing oil and water. You're trying to plug a garden hose into an electrical wall socket.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, you're absolutely yeah. right. So it's interesting that you mentioned that, because I know that off the air you mentioned vibration. And what's really funny is that I get these things that are kind of hits where I can feel somebody. And I've always said that I could feel their vibration, not their energy, that it's a vibrational thing. So is vibration a physical thing too?
Well, vibrations can cause physical effects, just like our voices. When we're talking, those vibrations of our vocal cords are deflecting the surrounding air molecules in a wave pattern of a specific frequency and amplitude. So that when that exact pattern hits our ears or hits a recording device, it is recognized as a intelligent voice, so to speak.
Right.
So vibrations themselves can actually have, you know, physical qualities, because it's actually the physical substances that are vibrated. But it doesn't sure. necessarily mean that those vibrations are being generated physically. It's just that the vibrations okay. are having an effect physically, sure.
Okay.
So, Tom, you know, twice in my life, I've been physically attacked by an entity in a home. First time I was pushed over. Second time I was smacked so hard in the head that it actually left a mark and a splitting headache for about 2 days. Now, does that apply to you know, being physically attacked by something as well?
Absolutely. What we're looking at, once again, if we get to that very broad definition that I've given to the paranormal, we're having a physical effect that interacts with its environment okay. with no direct physical cause. Clearly, what makes the attacks that you talk about paranormal is the fact that there is no physical body generating that effect. In fact, there's no physical structure anywhere that it would actually mm-hmm. generate, house, and direct physical energy to cause that effect.
I tell you what, at the time, it felt pretty damn physical. Felt pretty physical.
So one of the theories that I've always never been able to fully connect, but has always sort of twittered around in my head, with my apologies to Rick, because he hates it when I talk about this.
No. As a matter of fact,
my first article I ever wrote for Paranormal Underground was about quantum physics and how I thought that because when you look at the world and the universe on a quantum level, it is so bizarre compared to what we see on this macro level. You know, things blink in and out of states, and everything is only probabilities. And so I've always thought that somehow that had to be tied in to what we see as paranormal activity. But that's observed on a quantum level, and we don't live our lives on a quantum level. So is there something that ties that together?
Oh, absolutely. And this is one of the paradigms that I've been able to come up with. Oh, and just to mention before I go on with that to Rick, what I'm saying, and I hope that your audience stays aware of this, that I'm not saying that there was anything invalid with your experience.
Oh, no, not at all, Tom. I didn't get that at all. My thing, like what Karen says, is I've never really taken the time to understand the whole quantum mechanics, quantum theory thing. it's not that I can't understand it, just never really took the time. You know, however, I did like, you know, What the Bleep Did We Know? That was great.
Mm-hmm. The, as far as the quantum physics is concerned, when we define the paranormal as an effect, a physical observation that's an actual effect that interacts with its environment with no direct physical cause that's okay. connected to it, we have what's known in quantum physics and in physics in general as what they call non-local causality. One author put it, it's like getting a black eye in Miami from a punch that's thrown in Cleveland.
Is that like spooky action at a distance, or is that different?
Yeah, that is exactly what Einstein meant. And it's okay. kind of interesting that he used that particular word, spooky.
Spooky, yeah.
Okay. Now, spooky action.
The way that Einstein perceived this is that quantum physics looked quote-unquote spooky because we couldn't see the underlying structure that was the cause of all these very strange effects.
Absolutely.
One of Einstein's famous sayings was that, you know, quantum physics is impressive, but I don't believe that God rolls dice. and so...
Yep.
What people are not quite aware of is that in the early 20th century and to the mid-20th century, really, maybe to about the 60s and 70s, physics, by and large, was under the dominion of what I would call the relativists. These were actually the followers and the disciples, so to speak, of Einstein.
Mm-hmm.
And starting around in the 60s and the 70s, there was a changeover to where physics then became under the dominion of the quantists.
Yes.
Okay.
And so understand the dilemma that they have here. With Einstein, he said that, look, the reason why these things look all crazy is because we can't understand the underlying causes to them. But there must be a cause. God does not play dice.
Right.
So to Einstein, for example, given the state of the universe locally around the planet Earth as it is right at this moment, he said, given enough information and given the mathematical algorithms necessary to calculate it, you could indeed, from the current state of reality right now, predict what the weather is going to be in Cincinnati 7 days from now at 2 p.m. in the afternoon. This theoretically would be absolutely predictable. Now, this creates a problem. The problem for the quantum physicists is this, is that there is just this giant hole in their understanding that is blatant.
Yes.
Einsteinian philosophy, yes. Einsteinian philosophy exposes the emperor for having no clothes.
Yes.
And so what the quantum physicists have done was that they declared that no, the universe is weird like this just because it's weird.
Right.
Yeah.
It's impossible to tell what the weather's going to be like in Cincinnati a week from now just because it is, just because it's impossible, and that's the way the universe is, and that's it. And in doing that, they presented the emperor with a full set of clothing.
Right, right. So one of the things that is interesting to me about physics, and I think that I actually read about this on your site a little bit today, is gravity. Now, most people believe that we completely understand gravity, and yet there's never been a theory that accurately describes it. Isn't that right?
Absolutely. Gravity, in fact, was one of the conceptual keys that helped me break through and come up with the model that I came up with. I call gravity the elephant in the room.
Yeah, it is.
Okay, yeah.
Can you explain that a little bit? Because I think that a lot of people who are listening to us are maybe a little surprised to hear that we don't understand gravity.
That's exactly right. And, folks, this is in all the physical disciplines, there's a handful of facts that are considered trade secrets. In other words, the too much publicity on them is going to be bad for business. And one of these is gravity, and I'll explain to you what I mean. What you were taught about in school is gravitational effect.
Yes.
And we know exactly what gravitational effect is. We know it so well that we can launch satellites and spacecraft through the solar system with great degrees of precision and accuracy because we're very skilled at understanding gravitational effect. But when it comes to gravity itself, what it is, not what it does, but what it is, we really have not established what gravity is yet. And, for example, when Einstein was working on his famous unified field theory, which he was never able to prove mathematically, the stumbling block that he ran up into is that he was not able to express gravity mathematically through the three spatial dimensions into one temporal dimension. He couldn't do it. And Karen, you mentioned earlier about, you know, the difference between quantum mechanics and what we experience in the macro world.
Yes.
Which is very well defined by relativity on the macro level.
Yes.
All attempts to reconcile the theories of relativity and the theories of quantum mechanics.
And it doesn't work. Both,
yes. And we use both. We use both to describe the universe. We need two systems to describe it. The thing that constantly thwarts the reconciliation of those two systems is gravity. Physicists use what's called the standard model to describe the universe, capital S, capital M.
Right.
It is a model that lists all the particles, all the forces, and all their interactions. And it does a pretty good job at explaining some of the universe. People would be surprised that the amount of the universe that the standard model describes, I think, is roughly about 4 to 5%. But the standard model is missing one key ingredient, and that is it has absolutely no expression for gravity. Here's an example that I'll give people that everybody will be able to relate with, and this will kind of remove the veil a little bit so you can see the elephant that's hiding in the middle of the room. You were taught in school that all the structures of the universe were assembled through gravity.
Okay.
That everything, all the cosmic particles collected in one place and formed stars and galaxies and planets and solar systems and all those kinds of things. These were all assembled through the force of gravity. It's considered the fundamental shaping force of the universe. However, if you recall, you were also taught in school that what generates gravity are galaxies, stars, planets, solar systems. In other words, the very things that generate gravity were supposed to have been created by gravity before there were any objects to generate gravity.
Chicken egg.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, right. So what came first?
Yes, exactly. And so that's the elephant that's sitting in the room that we sat like, you know, wooden logs in school chairs over decades and even centuries and listened to this coming down from the pulpit. And, you know, most people never stopped and realized, hey, this doesn't make any sense.
Right. Well, so I know Rick was just asking me in our little, we have a little Skype window, and he was kind of saying he wasn't understanding how quantum physics and macro physics are not the same. And I can just kind of quickly say that quantum physics or macro physics, in other words, the physics that we experience of the universe, we experience things as very solid, very predictable, and very real. In the quantum universe, it's all probabilities. It's either matter can be a particle, or it can be a wave, or it can be, or energy. So it's all very uncertain, and everything acts really weird on this tiny level. Yet at this big level that we see it, it's very solid and predictable. Is that a good way to explain it?
Yeah, let me give an example. According to relativity and macro physics, the standard model of the universe and relativity, that anywhere in the universe where two atoms of hydrogen and one atom of oxygen combine to form a molecule at standard temperature and pressure in a vicinity with a sufficient gravitational field to collect these molecules together in one place, you will have clear water.
Right.
Anywhere in the universe, those things come together. And this is absolutely certain, and it's absolutely predictable. In the quantum world, it basically says that you have no idea how these things would assemble themselves until they are actually observed. They exist in a state of probability where it could be anywhere, at any time, at any velocity, at any position, until something intercedes and observes that state, and the actual act of observing it will collapse all those probability waves into an actualized piece of reality at a specific coordinate in space and a specific coordinate in time.
Right.
And that's why they don't gel with one another.
Okay.
Quantum physics also has no expression for gravity. And here's what the problem is with gravity again, because this is going to, when we talk about this, I'm sure we'll get to it a little later, this is going to be fundamental to this theory about the paranormal. Gravity, folks, is supposed to be a force.
Mm-hmm.
Well, here's the problem with that. A force is supposed to be something that is conveyed by a particle that propagates itself as a wave. So, for example, we have electromagnetism. We have a particle, an electron, and it propagates itself as an electromagnetic field. And that field is actually the thing that applies the force. The electron is the particle that conveys the force.
Right.
And so we have three forces in nature that we know of that we have defined in this way. And that's electromagnetism and the strong and weak nuclear forces. However, with gravity, we have a problem. For decades, we have been searching for what's called a graviton. That's a particle of gravity.
Okay.
And throughout all those decades, we've never been able to isolate or find one. As far as we can tell, it doesn't even exist. Even though, from a material point of view, physicists dig their heels and say, no, the graviton must exist because everything in the universe must have a material explanation. We've never detected a wave of gravity. As far as we know, that doesn't exist either.
Another question about gravity. Isn't gravity also an extremely weak force compared to the other forces in the universe?
Well, that's a difficult thing to quantify because we don't really know what gravity is.
True.
They say that electromagnetism is the most important force in the universe.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly, in terms of the force that we can define as such, a particle that propagates itself as a wave, that's true. But what assembled the universe? According to astrophysics and according to modern physics, it's the quote-unquote force of gravity that collected the universe into one place.
Right.
And consequently, in a sense, that gravity itself is the most significant force in the universe. Gravity can bend space in the way that electromagnetism cannot.
Yes.
And so for anyone to come out and say, well, gee, gravity is a weak force in comparison to electromagnetism, is a statement that is not fully backed up by what we know.
Okay.
Right. So, all right, since we're talking about gravity, you know, one of the big things that they talk about, whatever, with UFOs is anti-gravity. Now, is that possible, according to this model of yours, that we could create such a thing, a force that fights against gravity?
Yes, but it's not expressed in the traditional terms of anti-gravity.
Okay.
Because to me, anti-gravity is a term like other dimensions, so to speak, or higher dimensions. It's a term that we kind of use to talk about something that we really don't understand.
Okay.
To me, according to my model, there is something as anti-gravity, but I don't call it that. What I say is that all physical mass in the universe has presence. In other words, there's the mass can have a varying degree of presence.
Okay.
So, for example, if you were to take something that on Earth weighed 100 pounds, mm-hmm. and you were able to reduce its physical presence in space-time by half, that object would only weigh 50 pounds now.
Okay.
It would still be there. And so working in that direction would create the effect of what has been traditionally called anti-gravity, but I don't call it that. I call it the degree of physical presence.
Okay. All right.
Interesting.
Yeah, definitely. So, shoot, I had another thing I wanted to... Oh, I know. So, since we're talking about space, one of the things that quantum physics mathematics seems to bear out is that there are far more than the three or four, depending on who you are and how you define it, dimensions that we experience, that there are up to something like 11 folded dimensions or something like that. So does that jibe with the theory that you've come up with as well?
Well, actually it doesn't, and I'll explain why. What you're talking about, I believe, is string theory mm-hmm. or super string theory. Mm-hmm. And there's two different versions of these kinds of theories. One, the basic string theory has a mathematical expression for 11 dimensions, which is seven more than the three spatial and the four temporal, and the one temporal. The superstring theory has an expression of 26 dimensions.
Okay.
And these are all mathematical. And there's two problems with string theory, among others, but... There's two fundamental problems. They have not yet been able to explain how these other dimensions somehow can be present within physical space-time, but cannot be experienced or measured. That's a puzzle that they haven't solved. The other thing is, and this is one of the trade secrets, folks, which you'll never hear talked about, unless you dig deep into it and do the research, is that all string theory is dependent on the existence of a graviton.
Oh.
If there is no graviton, string theory collapses.
Okay. All right, so this is what we need to do. We need to go to break, pay a couple bills, and you can stick around for another segment, right? Because I have some burning questions I want to ask you.
I'll be here.
All right, so we will be right back. We're talking to Tom Fusco, author of Beyond the Cosmic Veil. It's cosmicveil.com. Stick around, and we'll get some more questions answered about this. Paranormal Underground Radio on ZTalk Radio.
Hi, this is Karen Frazier, author of Avalanche of Spirits, The Ghosts of Wellington, a new book from Ghost Night Media. In summer of 2009, I visited Wellington, Washington, a former railroad town in the Cascade Mountains of Washington State, where the worst avalanche disaster in the history of the United States occurred. 96 people lost their lives. What I found there changed my life forever. Before I visited Wellington, I wasn't sure that I believed in ghosts or even in the human soul. Now I know for sure that ghosts are real and that our souls go on after we die. You can read all about my experiences at Wellington in my new book, Avalanche of Spirits, The Ghosts of Wellington, which is on sale at Amazon.com. To learn more, visit avalancheofspirits.com.
In her riveting novel, Breaking the Beyond, writer Kim Casey brings to life a supernatural tale filled with mystery, humor, and intrigue. Kim's suspenseful story focuses on Risa, a compassionate social worker who assists Owen, a young psychiatric patient. Is a 300-year-old entity speaking through Owen, or does he simply possess multiple personalities? Visit awningpublishing.ca to order your copy of Breaking the Beyond. That's publishing.ca.
Hi, it's John here from Haunted Cornwall FM in the UK. We will be on Z-Talk now on a Sunday afternoon from 3 till 5 Eastern. We do talk all about the paranormal. Doesn't matter what it is, as long as it's paranormal. Audience are invited to get involved. If you've got questions, ask, because we've got a superb team that will be able to answer them. We don't sensationalise, we just tell the truth. However, if we find out there are fakes about, we will name and shame them. You've got to listen in to Haunted Cornwall FM from the UK on Z-Talk, 3 till 5 Eastern.
Your assignment is to listen to The Buzz on Monday nights from 8 to 10 p.m. Central on ztalkradio.com. This message will self-destruct.
Radio Network.
All right, welcome to back to Paranormal Underground Radio at ztalkradio.com. We are your hosts, Karen Frazier and Rick Hale, not necessarily in that order, of course. And we're still being joined by Tom Fusco, and it's a fascinating conversation. It's a new way for me of looking at things. Obviously, Karen has a lot more experience with that. So, you know, welcome back, Tom, and thanks for sticking around for another segment.
Well, here I am. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, that's right. You're shifting Rick's paradigm tonight. So
yes.
There you go.
I'm hoping I'll shift everybody's paradigm before it's done.
I think that you've got some really fascinating theories. And, yes. You know, I was telling you off the air, you talk a lot like my husband, who I call Techie McScience Geek. So I'm good with this. So we were talking about gravity. And here's what I'd like to know, because you said a few minutes ago, before we got into our discussion of gravity, you said, well, gravity is what led me to put it all together. So explain that.
Yes. one of the things that we've observed about gravity, other than the fact that we have never observed a physical component to gravity, is that when we look out into the universe, we've been able to detect enough of that now for a couple decades to have discovered that we actually see the evidence for about 90% more gravity than there is visible mass to generate it. We see these great expanses of what they call gravitational lensing, which is the actual bending of space.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't see any adacent mass next to it.
So it would be like what happens around a planet, but there's no planet there.
Precisely.
Okay.
Precisely. That's what we see. Now, of course, one of the underlying motives of many physicists, and this is what people also need to distinguish, a trade secret, that there's a difference between the agenda of physics and the agenda of physicists, who are human beings and they have their own agenda. One of the agendas of physicists, many of them, is to come up with a completely material explanation for the universe. In other words, they think they're on the cusp of being able to finally kill God or anything spiritual whatsoever. This is why they call the Higgs boson that they're looking for the God particle.
Right.
Because if they can discover it, and if it does behave the way that their model says it should, they have opened up or discovered one of the keys to how the universe became so orderly.
Yeah, but they're not finding it.
Yes, they're not finding it. Of course, my model predicted a long time ago that they would never find the Higgs boson.
Because it doesn't exist.
Well, no, exactly, and it doesn't exist in the form that they think it is. Even now, the slight pieces of evidence where they're speculating it might be evidence for the Higgs boson, the bandwidths are so low, the giga electron volt levels that they're finding these little jumps at, are so low that it would actually need another companion particle that was completely unpredicted by their model in order to make it do what it's supposed to do. But the God particle is called that because if they can find it, they can explain at least part how the universe got its orderly state, and therefore they can tell all the poor, decrepit, ignorant believers in a deity that here is your God.
Right. Right.
This little particle is your God. And so that's an agenda that, you know, that Einstein would have been very appalled by. He would have called them, and he did, the fanatical atheists.
Well, he believed in an impersonal creator, sort of.
Yes.
Yes.
He said that if there are laws, there must be a lawgiver.
Right.
And he called the fanatical atheists creatures who cannot hear the music of the spheres.
Okay, sorry about that. I accidentally got cut off.
Yeah, Rick dropped off, so he's gonna have you just keep going though. He'll catch up.
Yeah.
Okay. So anyway, where we have these large areas where there is, and again, I'll repeat the definition again, a physical effect that interacts with its environment, with its surroundings, but has no direct adjacent physical cause in its vicinity. In order to explain all this extra gravity, physicists have dreamt up this hypothetical material called dark matter.
Oh, I was going to ask. Okay.
Oh, yeah, I'm always interested about that.
That was actually what I thought was going to be the explanation for those, because it's really, really dense, right?
Yeah, and here's what the funny thing about it is, folks, okay, that this dark matter is supposed to be so massive, and I say massive in a scientific understanding,
yes,
that it has so much mass that it can generate almost 90% of the gravity in the universe, and yet is completely undetectable. There's no way to measure it. There's no way to find it. And yet it's more than any other particle that there is in the universe. That's really weird.
Yeah.
I say that there's as much evidence for dark matter as there is coming down the stairs Christmas morning, finding presents underneath the tree, and based
plug
on
your
those
ears,
presents,
kids. Go on.
Yeah, expecting you know, saying that this is proof for a Santa Claus.
Right, right. So I just had this huge aha moment, and I know that you mentioned it during the break, and at the time I thought, well, okay, but as you were talking about that, of course, gravity is paranormal.
Exactly.
Yeah, I just, as you were talking about that, it clicked because you said that on the break, and I thought, all right, well, he can explain it. I get it.
There you go. Hey, folks, we have this moon that's revolving around the Earth, and we've been told that gravity is what holds it into its orbit. Well, the truth is that gravitational effect holds it into orbit. But what's also true is there is no physical connection between the Earth and the moon.
Right.
It's just hanging out there. And so here's Einstein's spooky action at a distance. Gravity is indeed paranormal.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. So bring this all together for me then. So gravity is paranormal. So how does gravity being paranormal lead to explaining physical paranormal activity, the physical manifestation of paranormal activity there?
Oh, yeah. This is the $64,000 question.
Yes.
And this is the one that's been bringing the house down, so to speak. Okay. Gravity is an actual effect. And we see the evidence of it in these gravitational lensings in space where there's no adjacent physical mass. So something must be causing it, but that cause must lie outside of dimensional space-time. It's not within our physical realm. Only the effect is visible and observable in our realm. When Einstein was working on his unified equation or unified field equations, there was a gentleman who was a physicist and a mathematician who was trying to help him out. And his name was Theodore Calusa. And what Calusa came up with one day, he said, why don't we just try a fifth coordinate? Let's take a mathematical fifth coordinate that's hypothetical. It exists outside of the four dimensions of space-time. And let's put that in the equation and see what we can do with it. So Calusa did this, and he ran Einstein's calculations, and at the very end, he subtracted that non-physical element out of it, and lo and behold, he had balanced Einstein's equation. So Calusa, towards the end of his career, came to the conclusion that gravity was an effect that was caused by something outside of space-time.
Okay.
Now, we talked about earlier, when, Karen, you were talking about seeing an object flying across the room.
Oh, more than once, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Here's the funny thing. Here we have an effect with no direct physical cause.
Right.
Rick, you were talking about being attacked.
Yeah, sir.
You're talking about, yes, you're talking about a real physical effect with no direct physical cause.
Yes.
Right.
So What if we try to merge these things?
Okay.
What if we take gravity, which we understand is associated with the bending of space, which most people are familiar with, Einstein's theory about the curvatures of space-time, and how that theory was proved when they were able to observe a solar eclipse, where they noticed the lights of the stars adjacent to the solar disk were deflected 1.75 degrees.
Okay.
So we know that gravity bends space.
Right.
Let's take that gravity inside of a haunted house. Let's take the bending of space inside of a haunted house and see what we would get.
Okay.
All right. Now, this is one element of my theory. So imagine that we have an area in a haunted house that suddenly the space begins to bend slightly.
Okay.
Let's almost picture it like a bubble that begins to expand and bend out.
Okay.
Well, what that's going to do is that's going to compress and twist the space at the outside edge of that expanding bubble.
Okay, now, all right. Hang on one second, Tom. Now, it is so incredibly interesting that you say this. Now, and I'm going to let you know why. Because when this thing pushed me, when it appeared right before I fell over, and after it pushed me, it was like a big black mass.
Like a bubble.
Like a bubble.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's exactly what it was that attacked me. Now, I don't really believe in demons, per se, but I do believe in certain kind of elements in our universe that, you know, don't exactly care for humans very much. Is this something that could have come through that bubble, more or less, and was really causing havoc to this poor girl and, you know, attacked me?
Well, yes. According to my model, the answer is yes.
Okay.
But what I'm going to need to do, of course, is to give a little bit of what I'm talking about to lead up to where that becomes much more clearer.
Okay.
Because this is the thing that's been just bowling people over and have been opening their eyes, and it's like, oh, my, how this explains so many different things.
Okay.
But for a moment, we're going to come back to that, I promise.
Okay.
For a moment, we continue with this bending of space that would twist and compress the space in the immediate vicinity on the leading outside edge of it. Now, in the cosmos, we have pretty much vacuums out there. But in a haunted house, we have material. All the space is occupied by something on Earth. At the very least, there's air molecules there.
Yes.
So when you start twisting the space that is occupied by air molecules and bending it, one of the things that you're going to do is put mechanical stress on those molecules and atoms.
Okay.
And what that does is that mechanical force is converted into energy. And that energy causes the electrons in these atoms and molecules to jump up into their higher orbits. They become excited.
Okay.
And they jump into higher orbits inside the atoms.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when electrons do that and they expend this excitation and they drop back down to their lower orbits, they will release a couple different things. The first thing that we have with this excitation of electrons is that it produces an electromagnetic field. So this is why...
Okay.
Yeah, I got it.
Yeah.
Okay.
You got it.
Yeah,
this is why investigators
I got it.
This is why investigators detect these emergences of these electromagnetic fields where there is no physical mechanism present to generate it. According to my theory, that field is actually being generated by the space itself and the atoms that occupy that space.
Okay,
the second thing is that when these electrons drop back down, they can, under certain conditions, give off two different things. One of the things that they can give off is thermal energy.
Yes.
Okay.
Heat or cold, right?
Well, the leading edge that I'm talking about is the heat end of it.
Right.
The receding edge is the cold, and I'll tell you about that in a moment.
Okay.
So we have a heat signature. Now, here's the interesting thing. People have gone on these investigations with thermal imaging equipment and have picked up some very interesting thermal images. And on occasion, they've actually picked up what we would consider an apparition. But if you study these thermal apparition images, you'll notice something very unusual about them. They're not like the thermal images of living beings. So you don't have these extremes of hot and cold, where on the exposed flesh you've got real white hot spots, and then maybe the tips of the nose and the ears is a dark blue, and the clothing is very different in contrast to the heat signature of the exposed flesh. When you look at these paranormal apparition thermal images, you'll notice that the thermal signature is more or less even over the entire surface of it. Now, what does that mean? That means that the thermal image, the heat that's being generated, is actually occurring at the very surface. There is no mechanism inside of that apparition to generate heat like there is in living flesh.
Right.
Okay. Yes.
Makes
so
sense.
This uniformity of this thermal image would also corroborate what I'm talking about, that the heat is actually being generated at the surface of this expanding bubble.
Okay.
And so it would be more or less uniform. Now, the other thing that these electrons can release is photons.
Yes, light.
Okay,
there you go. And that's a very strange thing. We still don't fully understand how an electron can emit a photon without having the pattern of the photon within itself and without reducing the substance of the electron at all. We still don't know how that happens. That's very paranormal, too.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But we have an example of that in our everyday world. They take an electromagnetic field, they pass it through a particular material, they excite the electrons. When the electrons drop back down, they emit photons, which are light. We call that a light-emitting diode.
Yep, LEDs are awesome.
That's exactly how it works.
Yeah.
Now, what's weird, if you've been following me and mentally imaging this in your mind, you'll notice that I just described a luminous orb.
You did, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Got it, Rick?
Yeah, no, I actually, that didn't make a lot of sense to me.
Yeah.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
Please proceed.
See, this is what, I'm sorry, what this theory does is creates that connective tissue that tells us about the physics, instead of the connective tissue being the disembodied spirit that connects all these events. So we've been talking about the outer edge. Now, here's another thing that is something that is affected by our misconceptions, our perceptions. It's a very common misconception that people talk about the failure of electrical equipment.
Yes.
And they talk about, well, again, they go to the only connecting concept that they have is the spirit. And they say, well, the spirit must be draining these batteries or whatever in order to physically manifest.
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of loosely refer to Einstein's formula of E equals mc squared, that matter and energy are two different forms that can be converted from one to the other.
Right.
But when they quote this formula, they forget a very important aspect of it. And that is that there's an incredible amount of energy that would be required to create the tiniest piece of matter. The physics of it is this. The entire energy output of the sun would not be sufficient to make one McDonald's hamburger.
Mm.
And
wow.
So,
okay.
Yeah, and that's a physical fact. That's based on Einstein's equations. And so what you have is that the physics of what they're describing is basically impossible. You wouldn't have, let's say, a cold spot of 20 or 30 degrees that's 3 foot across if something was drawing energy from that spot in order to physically manifest.
Okay.
You would be talking about how many square miles have just dropped to negative 273 degrees centigrade, absolute zero,
right,
in order to get enough energy to even create a wispy puff of cigarette smoky kind of mist for a fraction of a second.
Okay.
Now, let's go over and talk about the UFOs for just a second.
Yeah, good.
Excellent.
I'd like to.
Yes.
Perfect.
All right, because we're going to go back and forth with this a little bit. Because UFOs, when you study what they do, it's the same things that happen in haunted houses. But this same phenomena about electrical equipment failing also happens in UFO phenomena. That when a UFO gets in the vicinity...
You're right, yes.
Yes, you got it. You know, suddenly cars go dead, batteries read zero, radios don't work, flashlights don't work. Mm. But it's a funny thing. You would never hear anyone suggest that the UFO is draining the batteries in your flashlight in order to manifest.
That's true.
Mm.
Now, why is there a difference between the two in the way that we look at it? The UFO doesn't have a ghost in it.
I was going to say, it's because of our starting assumptions of what it is.
Exactly. So here we have...
So hold on a second.
Electromagnetic fields. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, so we're not talking little green men, or little gray men, excuse me, I have been... somebody told me off about that once before. But, I mean, are we talking about, you know, physical aliens here from a different world or what?
Well, I'm not going to go to the criminology side yet.
Okay.
Yeah, okay.
I'm sticking with the forensics.
Okay.
I'm not in the business to tell you whether the pots and pans flying across the room are dead Aunt Mary trying to get your attention or a demon tormenting the family or an adolescent girl in the house.
Okay.
That's not my job. My job is to tell you how the pots and pans fly across the room.
Right.
Okay.
So I can't really talk about little green men and still do my duty for the community.
Very good.
Mm-hmm. But anyway, the reason why the ufologists don't think about a UFO draining batteries from a flashlight in order to manifest is because they're not thinking about spirits.
Right.
They're thinking about technology.
Yes.
And this is established technology that electromagnetic fields at certain frequencies and oscillations can indeed interfere and stop electrical equipment from working. We know that to be a fact. So here's the funny thing, that here we have these EMF readers, which unfortunately only detect quantity, but they don't detect the quality of the field. And here we're measuring all these EMF fields, and then we have malfunctions of electrical equipment, and instead of being able to see what's in front of our face, the cause and effect, we're completely blind to what's going on because we got a ghost in our head.
We're blinded by our assumption, but yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the ghost in the head blocks the mind from seeing what's in front of our, what's directly in front of our eyes. So... this would explain this electromagnetic field. One of the predictions of my theory is that if we were able to bring in oscillators, oscilloscopes, and be able to detect the quality of these electromagnetic fields, we will find that at certain frequencies and amplitudes, that's what would be associated with the malfunctioning of electrical equipment.
Okay.
All right, so there's the there's no need to have a ghost intervene on your flashlight batteries. That's not what's happening.
Okay.
Now, let's take a look at that if we have an expanding bubble like what I'm talking about, we've been talking about the outer edge.
Yes.
Let's take a look at the inside.
Oh, let's.
Yeah, let's see what would happen there. So... one of the things that would happen is that if this bubble began expanding in standard space-time, it would generate a vacuum inside of it.
Okay.
It would be devoid of space, of material and of thermal energy. Now, if it opened up very, very slowly, and I think in most cases they do, that the laws of equilibrium would cause the surrounding air molecules and the thermal energy that's contained in them to flow gracefully into that opening vacuum. So it would get a very quick equilibrium like water seeking its own level. And so we would not be able to detect any variation or very, very slight one in heat. But if it happened quickly... If a bubble opened quickly like that for a short period of time, you would have the same kind of effect as if you walked up to your door from the inside, your front door on a cold winter's day, and opened it up quick.
Right.
You would feel a couple different things.
Right.
First of all, it would create a vacuum.
Yep.
And with that vacuum, the air from the outside would rush in to try to fill the vacuum that was created by the door being open. Now, of course, that air is cold. So if you have a vacuum that's devoid of thermal energy that opens up, you're going to have a cold spot.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to appear, and then it's going to disappear as quickly as it appears.
Very quickly, yep.
Yeah. Another thing is that you're going to have an inrushing of air molecules. After all, it's the molecules that are holding the heat energy in the air that we're talking about.
Right.
So there you would have your mystery breezes.
Yeah. But also, isn't it, if you have cold air come in contact with hot air that quickly, aren't you possibly going to have some manifestation of visual things as well?
Yes, that's also very possible based on humidity.
Mm-hmm.
There's also a possibility, and this is just a speculation, that there could be an element of sun illuminescence in there.
Mm-hmm.
But the effect of this is that, again, it would create another manifestation that we observe in paranormal sites with the exact same physical model. Now, here's another kicker. This is funny, guys. When you start and think about this, it just makes so much sense. It's like, oh my goodness, how could it have been any other way? I've heard report after report after report of people saying that when they go into an area where there is paranormal activity, they all talk about a feeling of heaviness.
Yes. Absolutely.
Yes. And I've talked to people who have experienced this personally, and the word heaviness is very important.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not a sensation that's so ambiguous. It's like 10 different people would give you 6 different explanations for it.
Right.
Virtually every single person that experiences it uses the word heavy.
Yes.
And we all know, all of us human beings know what heavy means. It's a common thing. We know what it is when we pick something up, or, you know, if we ride a roller coaster and feel the G-forces. We all know what the word heavy means.
Right.
Well, folks, what does the bending of space generate?
Gravity. So, you know what's really funny? Is that I actually wrote a book about a haunted place, and I describe the feeling of heaviness as a feeling of gravity.
Exactly.
I was talking about your theory without even knowing it, huh?
Mm. And what's great about that is because when you get all the other stuff out of your head and just look at it for what it is, it's a natural inclination to say, yeah, this must be gravitational.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so here's a uniform model that describes this, all with the same mechanics. Now, it was interesting. The first time this happened, her name was Karen, too. She's one of the investigators of the California Haunts team.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a radio show, and I was talking to the host, and she was on the line, and when she heard this, you could hear her gasp. You could hear the gestalt, you know, the gestalt, the veil lifting. She says, didn't you just describe what we call a spirit vortex?
Yes, you did. Yeah, absolutely.
I did. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I told her that she gets a star on her paper.
Yeah, wow. You know,
so now, go
ahead.
I'm sorry. I keep stepping on you, you know.
No, I was going to say you just have me thinking. I have to let you know that Rick's Skype cut him off. And so he's not on the line anymore, and he wanted me to convey his apologies. It's cut him off like 3 times now, so he's given up trying. So you just have to, I know. So, but yeah, you definitely are shifting the way that I think about things, because this is what I've always wanted, is that underlying theory, because I believe the paranormal is normal. We just don't know it yet. So,
and you know what? That's a good way to put it. Because my feelings are is that in order for the paranormal to exist, the universe has to be put together in a way to allow it to happen.
Absolutely.
And so that would make it normal.
Yep. Absolutely. I agree with you 100%. So I wanted to ask you, because we just have a few minutes left, but I wanted to ask you about cryptids. Now, do they fit into your theories as well, or is that more of a zoological thing?
I've always traditionally looked at that as zoology, cryptozoology. Okay. In other words, I believe that someday they're going to drag a body in.
Right, yeah.
I don't think anybody's ever going to drag a tangible body of a spirit entity or one of those shadow ghosts into a lab.
No. So that's one of the things I wanted to talk to you about before we went off the air as well, is so I've seen an apparition, and I know other people have as well. So how can we see something that has no physical cause?
Well, here's another branch of my theory, is that I recognize the existence of a body of information that exists outside of space-time that dictates and determines the structure and the behavior of the physical universe. This is a very old idea. What no one had ever had was a model by which this information can materialize. So say, for example, you have an expanding differential, what I call a differential bubble, bubble of space-time.
Mm-hmm.
And imagine that you have information that is superluminal, that exists above space-time, above the speed of light, that somehow enters into that divot in space-time. It kind of falls into it. And as that information falls into it, it becomes sublight. And as it does so, it begins to materialize. So if you have information that still exists about a 19th century Victorian lady, and it falls into one of these bubbles, that bubble will take the form of that information as it materializes, and you see an apparition.
I'm going to have to think about that one for a while. Okay. Well, so that's so it's, is it, where's the information coming that it falls into from, that it falls into that bubble?
It sits on top of the physical universe. It's like a superstructure.
Okay.
David Bohm, a physicist from the 20th century, called it implicate order. It's also called configuration space. That's another theory. But it's a superstructure that sits on top of the physical universe that contains the body of information from which the universe is derived.
Right. So what you've developed essentially is a unifying theory, isn't it? And that's kind of the holy grail. That's what physicists are looking for.
Yeah. I mean, let's take one other thing. I know we're limited in time, but this is the freaky thing. We're talking about the difference between normal voices and paranormal voices.
Yes.
Well, imagine if an intelligence, a coherent body of information, tried to use its voice to speak but didn't have a body.
Mm-hmm.
But instead, what would happen is that action would somehow bend the fabric of space-time. Well, that fabric would act like a diaphragm. It would act like a set of vocal cords. And as that fabric of space vibrated, it would do one of two things. It would agitate air molecules in the exact same kind of frequency and amplitude as a physical vocal cords, but it would also give off a frequency and amplitude of an electromagnetic field that, while not heard audibly, would be picked up by the coils in a microphone And there you would have an EVP.
Brilliant. Got it. Wow. I definitely need to read your book. I found the articles on your website that anybody can go to and read. It's CosmicVeil.com. I found them really informative. I found them pretty easy to follow. And I think that they'll be easy to follow for people even without a really solid physics background because you explain it so well. And then they also, on your website, is the first chapter of your book.
Yes, and if you order it directly from our publisher's link on the website, that's the best thing for us to do. It's the same price as it is on Amazon, but Amazon takes 40% of my royalties just because you order it there. But yes, please know, folks, that much of the time that I spent working on this book was to reduce these things into easy-to-follow-and-understand concepts. This is not the typical scientific book where they get all high and mighty so that nobody understands them except themselves.
Yeah.
This is all accessible, yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so the book is called Beyond the Cosmic Veil, and they can order it through CosmicVeil.com.
Yes, it's Behind the Cosmic Veil.
Oh, sorry, Behind. I'm sorry. I couldn't remember the first word because you've kind of, my mind is absolutely spinning. You know what's going to happen is I'm going to read your book and then you're going to get like a zillion emails from me. Well, what about this?
So. Well, that would be wonderful. That's great. And people can contact me through the website. There is a contact email there.
Okay.
But what's been happening with this has just been opening up so many different people's minds to different possibilities. I've had investigators say that they go into a site now, and for the first time in their lives, they actually understand what they're seeing in front of their eyes.
Yeah.
And it's just been wonderful.
Yeah, and I think that I will approach it differently. I'm sorry we didn't have time to get into the psychic phenomena, because that's something that I experience, and I'd be really curious to know the roots of that, because, you know, I'm pretty, I don't know how it happens. I just know that it does happen. So, mm-hmm. So perhaps you will come on another time and we can discuss that.
Oh yes. Please have me back. I'd be happy to come back. And, you know, if you ever have a last minute cancellation, you can always give me a call. I'm good for short notices.
Oh, Cheryl, you got that?
Definitely.
Okay. So you know what? I would like to schedule a follow-up, but I'd like to read your book first. So maybe we can schedule a follow-up later this spring after I've read your book. Is it available on like Kindle or anything?
Unfortunately, there is no electronic version available yet.
Okay. Well, that's okay. I haven't read a real book in a while, but it doesn't mean I can't. I have new glasses. I can see again. So we're very good. So the author is Thomas Fusco, F-U-S-K-O, is that right?
It's F-U-S-C-O.
Oh, I'm sorry, Thomas Fusco, F-U-S-C-O, Behind the Cosmic Veil at CosmicVeil.com. I hope that you guys will go and pick up the book, or at the very least, read the articles he has. They're very easy to follow. They're very eye-opening. And Tom, thank you so much. It's been really fascinating. I'm sorry Rick wasn't able to make it for the end of the show.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me very much, and give Rick my regards, and thanks for everybody sharing this time with me, or allowing me to do it with them, and hopefully we can get together again and do it soon.
Oh, I would really like that, because I know after I read the book, I'm going to have like a billion questions. So there you go. Okay, so that was Thomas Fusco, everybody. Thank you so much, Tom. Have a good evening.
Oh, thank you, too. You do the same.
Okay, so coming up next week, February 16th, our first hour, we are going to be talking to Kim Casey, who is the author of a book called Breaking Beyond. It's a paranormal work of fiction. In the second hour, we're going to be talking to our friend Bill Murphy and his wife, Anita. Bill is on the show Fact or Fake, Paranormal Files on, is it on Sci-Fi, Cheryl?
It is, yes.
Okay, on Sci-Fi, and they are going to be talking about an upcoming event that is exploring the theory of thought form manifestation, and that's going to be March 23rd through 25th in Santa Paula, California at the historic Glen Tavern Inn. Cheryl, anything else we need to announce before we Before we hit the road?
Yeah. Check out paranormalunderground.net in a few days, hopefully this weekend. For the live listeners, we'll have a new magazine up. And also, we have some cool discussions going on in the forum, so try and join us there, too.
All right. That's paranormalunderground.net. And, of course, next week, join Rick and I. Rick will hopefully not be crashing off several times again like he did tonight. So it's 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. And even though Rick's here, I'm gonna say it other times in the flyover state. we're going to end a little bit early tonight. Cheryl and Chad have somewhere they have to be, and I can't run the board. So everybody, thank you so much for listening. Thanks to our guest, Tom Fusco, and we'll talk to you next week. Good night.
If you'd like to be a guest on Paranormal Underground Radio, email editor@paranormalunderground.net. Until next week, keep exploring the unexplained at www.paranormalunderground.net and join us again next week for Paranormal Underground Radio on the ZTalk Radio Network.
There's something in your mind you cannot hide. You can try everything, you'll be high in the end. There's something on your cheek that's flowing like a creek. Are there tears, or just dying memories? Keep doing what you do. You are the stolen thief. Keep saying what you say, but remember that everywhere. You'll be the stolen thief. You'll be the stolen thief. You'll be the stolen thief. You'll be the stolen thief, my friend. Maybe you think the people would fall into your traps, but look better around you. There's nothing but your lies. You're lost in your mind without no compass. You can try to pinch yourself and wake up fast. Keep doing what you do. But at any way, you are the stolen thief. Keep saying what you say, but beaming but at everywhere. You'll be the stolen thief. You'll be the stolen thief. You'll be the stolen thief. You'll be the stolen thief, my friend. Keep doing what you do, but remember that anyway, you are the stolen thief. I keep saying what you say, but remember that anyway, you'll be the stolen thief. You'll be the stolen thief. You'll be the stolen thief. You'll be the stolen thief, my friend.